Well, I'll say again, it is good to be together on this second Sunday of Easter. I'm thankful to Eric, our senior minister, as he is away for a bit of a study leave, much deserved after Easter. For his trust with me in the pulpit, I'm thankful to be in here with all of you who are joining in person and online. Today is the second Sunday of Easter, so Easter is not just a Sunday, but it is also a season in the Christian calendar, this 50-day season from Easter Sunday until Pentecost in May. This is a chance for us then to travel together down the paths of Jesus' friends and followers who first spread the good news that he is risen. Will you join me first in a moment of prayer? O God of new life, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts please you, the one who makes resurrection our reality. Amen. So as many of you know, in January, I started coursework for a PhD in theology, and when people ask how it's going, I'm not lying when I say it's going well. It really is. But with a never-ending list of things to read and papers to write, I've had to learn to be patient with myself, especially when I worry that I'm missing out because I can't read the books that friends are recommending or the pop culture podcasts my husband tells me I have to hear. Makes me think about how the first few months after I finished my Master's of Divinity degree, I did everything I could to squeeze in reading as much fiction as possible. After 3 years of swimming through scholarship and critical theory, I craved some simple storytelling. And one of the first books I picked up that summer was a novel called Buzz Aldrin, What Happened to You in All the Confusion? This book is about a 30-year-old named Matthias, who is a gardener living in a small city in Norway. Matthias lives a simple life. He likes his job. He's a good friend that he's known since high school that he keeps up with somewhat regularly. But at 30, he's beginning to wonder what his life is really all about. Matthias does not have many passions, except for one peculiar one, the life and story of the astronaut Buzz Aldrin. Perhaps you know a little bit about Buzz Aldrin. Matthias knew everything there is to know. But most likely we're more familiar with Neil Armstrong and not Buzz. Buzz was the second person to land on the moon. Well, we know Neil Armstrong and his inaugural lunar steps as it landed him a place in our historical consciousness. We often don't talk about Buzz Aldrin, even though he was just a few steps behind. Early in the book, Matthias has a conversation with his friend about Buzz and Neil, and he's going on about how Buzz was the actual captain of the mission. He was the better space pilot. He was the one who even designed some of the equipment on board. But his friend said that he would rather be Neil Armstrong, being known for words that went down in history when he said, "One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." But Matthias said he would rather be Buzz Aldrin, maybe second place, but still integral to the story. And then his friend jests, "Have you no ambition?" You see, Matthias is obsessed with Buzz Aldrin's story because he struggles with feeling like he is always in second place. It's not that he needs to be seen by everyone, but he wonders if he is missing out on something, if the world is just passing him by. He worries that he might always be invisible behind the first places, the Neil Armstrongs of our world. As I've been preparing for worship this morning and sitting with the story of Thomas and Jesus that we heard from the Gospel of John, I can't help but wonder if Thomas might have resonated with Buzz Aldrin too. The Gospel says that on the day that the risen Jesus first appears to his 11 disciples, or 10 of them, I guess, it just says that Thomas was not with them. I wish it was more specific. It doesn't tell us why. But it does say when his friends finally found Thomas, they told him that they had seen the Lord. And Thomas doesn't know if he can believe until he sees too. The story is a story from which we get the nickname Doubting Thomas. But sometimes I wonder if we do Thomas dirty by associating him with this derogatory description of his doubt. Is his doubt not somewhat understandable? When Thomas first heard that Jesus had appeared to everyone else, Jesus breathed the Holy Spirit on everyone but him, perhaps he felt like he had slipped into second place. Yes, he was one of the first to hear the good news, but he missed it firsthand. How was he supposed to believe this unexpected news that his friends told him? He wanted to, but he couldn't quite be so sure. But then a week later, it says, everyone is gathered together again, and Thomas is present. He's still holding on. He has not given up despite any lingering doubt. And again, Jesus appears. This time he approaches Thomas and invites him to touch his resurrected body. And he says, do not doubt, but believe. I don't hear Jesus' comment as a reprimand, but rather as a warm invitation to trust in this unexpected new reality of the Easter resurrection. And Thomas responds, my Lord and my God. He has exhaled his doubt and inhaled fresh belief. Today, kind of like Thomas, we find ourselves a week later from our own sunny and splendid Easter Sunday. But all week, this week has been cold, wet, and rainy. It may be easy for us today to feel something like Thomas, like maybe we missed out on whatever was really supposed to have happened last week. I remember feeling something like that on Easter a few years ago in 2021. The church I was serving in Kansas City was still only worshiping online. We were waiting a few weeks for people to get their vaccinations to launch an outdoor service. And that Easter also fell a few weeks after a positive but painful breakup of my own. And so as I had been vaccinated, I decided last minute to hop in my car and drive to my hometown of Memphis, Tennessee, to spend Easter weekend with some close friends and family. That Easter Sunday, I woke up at my parents' house, where my mom and I spent the morning. She made breakfast, and we watched my church's pre-recorded Easter service. It was a sweet moment, but it felt somehow strange. Easter is something we do together. What I loved about what we did here at Christ Church last weekend is that our movement through Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter Sunday was a full act of the community. We were all here together as we were experiencing each part of the Easter story. But that Easter Sunday a few years ago, as I was watching the service from states away, I missed a sanctuary full of people donning pastel colors and springtime apparel. I didn't just want to see the Easter lilies, I wanted to smell them too. I wondered if maybe I was missing out on the real experience of Easter, especially in the wake of a pandemic year full of so much pain, personal and public. I felt that maybe this radical hope of new life was just a hollow idea, something too good to be true. I think it's a similar kind of hollowness with which that character Matthias struggled throughout his story in the book Buzz Aldrin, What Happened to You. I won't spoil the whole story, but the book lingers through Matthias's feelings of despondency and yearning as he goes on quite an unexpected journey. It all begins when he travels to the Faroe Islands, where he ends up spending the better part of a year. These remote islands off the coast of Denmark are sparsely populated. They are not an easy place to live. With foggy landscapes and staggering cliffs, they're gorgeous, but there are no trees. There's no big plant life. When Matthias arrives, he thinks the landscape looks a bit like the moon. It was a similar topography to that which Buzz Aldrin was the second to tread. Yet in this unexpected, sparsely populated place, Matthias finds a group of people who are on a similar journey themselves. He makes some unlikely friends who also struggle with feeling like they're in second place all the time, and he spends months with them, learning to see them and learning to be seen in all of who he is. They understand his struggle of feeling like he is missing out on whatever it is that the go-getters of this world seem to get so easy. But in these friendships, Matthias comes to learn that there is no being second in the first place at all. One's ambitions in life need not be another's. What matters most, rather, is not being seen by the whole world, but simply being seen by and seeing the others who are right around you, loving each other, the fullness of who we all are. After this transformative year, the book ends with Matthias's return home, and he has no clear resolve for what's next. He hasn't found a new passion or a new call for what he's supposed to do in life. He simply has a new perspective, a new picture for the world that he lives in, one in which he describes, if you pull away a few kilometers and wait, you will see that each night this planet is covered with people staring out into space, thinking that there must be a system, that this gigantic desolation cannot be meaningless, that loneliness cannot be the only thing projected onto these skies. It's impossible. And he continues, so they point out the constellations for each other and the hope that it might give them a sure sign that someone is out there, someone who can tell them that they are visible, that they are doing their best, that their lives are true and meaningful, that they are not alone. When I read the story of Thomas and Jesus and John, I remember the way that Caravaggio painted the scene. You may be familiar with this painting, but he includes four figures, people who were likely friends of his own in real life. And he paints Thomas and two others inspecting Jesus' side, and Jesus observes warmly. He's a friend. He's sitting there in a strikingly human manner. In that picture and in this story, I see that Jesus understands Thomas. He points out the consolation of his wounded but resurrected body, and he encourages him to take heart, to believe. And when Jesus invites Thomas to reach out and believe, he invites the church to do the same. See, the Gospel of Thomas was written, or the Gospel of John was written about 120 CE, which is almost a full century after the crucifixion and these first stories of resurrection. The Jesus movement is in its second, third, maybe even fourth generation, so a lot has changed. The first listeners of John's gospel then worried that maybe resurrection had passed them by. They needed to know that they had not missed out because they were not eyewitnesses of what had happened 100 years prior. So when Jesus steps into the room and encourages Thomas, he encourages all who would follow later as well. That's why Jesus says that blessed are those who believe without seeing. He's not dissing Thomas or diminishing Thomas's doubt, but rather acknowledging it and turns to the audience to bring them into that room, into that moment. They, the audience, thus we too, are invited to touch and feel and believe, even without being eyewitnesses, the good news of resurrection, because resurrection is something we make real in our lives together. I love how this passage ends, as it says that many other things could have been mentioned in the gospel too, but these are written so that you may continue to believe and have life in his name. Which is to say, the story goes on. The gospel does have another chapter, but we think that the gospel of John originally ended here, so that one reading was left in that room with Jesus, even without being there historically in the first place. The story continued through the generations of those who keep following Jesus and embodying him in the world, which is to say, the story goes on with us too. Jesus steps into this room, invites us to see resurrection not as a past event, but as an ongoing reality that we can touch and feel. Embodying Easter, making resurrection real, though it does not only happen in big, dramatic, and joyful moments. It's something that can emerge within our everyday. The writer and organizer, Adrienne Marie Brown, talks about this in her book, Emergent Strategy, Shaping Change, Changing Worlds. She writes this book to anyone interested in learning how we can live better together in an ever-changing and an interconnected world. In leadership and community organizing, but in anything we do, I think, as a church and in any of our everyday lives, Brown says that our very being is a contribution to the people and places around us. She says, I am a cell-sized unit of the human organism, and I have to use my life to leverage a shift in the system by how I am, by the things I do. That we all exist within this wider, interconnected world in which we live means that the small ways that we see and name and believe in new life and life again make resurrection real in our wider reality. Every moment, then, might be a miracle. From the bright and sunny, splendid Sundays like last Easter to even the most dreary and difficult moments of our life. Brown teaches us how to celebrate the laughter that finds friends in the midst of grief, see how there is justice in advancing righteous anger. She says that there is opportunity even inside apparent failure, which I think is to say that resurrection practice, this thing that we do together, is simply about becoming more attuned to this miracle, to seeing the risen Christ present within each moment. One of the things I love about that book, Buzz Aldrin, What Happened to You, is that it does not end with Matthias as a totally different person. In many ways, he's still the loner that he was at the beginning of the story, but he has a new perspective, one in which he knows that he is not truly alone. He has been seen by others who he saw too. Together, they helped him find a fresh belief for who he is to be in the world. We need each other in order to see resurrection in each other's lives. Easter is something that we do together, something we embody as a church. We raise each other to fresh belief about who we might be as we make real resurrection together. Here at Christ Church, I think we do this when we meet for small groups, which provide space for each other to share our stories and witness resurrection in each other's lives. We do this when we serve and support our ministries of service and justice, like Nido de Esperanza in Washington Heights, the things we do as an LGBTQ ministry, sharing table downstairs, all these different ways in which we embody in the world what resurrection looks like in real life. We do this together each week. Christian tradition talks about how each Sunday's worship is a mini Easter. It's a chance to again and again praise and meditate on a God who makes real resurrection in our everyday lives. When I look back at that Easter a few years ago with my mom home alone in 2021, it actually stands out to me as one of my favorites. For confronting that fear that maybe I was missing out on Easter's reality, I realized that it was right in front of me. It was in my mom, sitting with me on a couch, worshiping with me over bacon and eggs on a quiet Sunday morning after a scary and struggling year. It was with me and the friends who could catch me in one of life's major tough turns. It was in the home that I had to go back to in the midst of endings and beginnings. I had no idea what new life was ahead of me after that Easter, the things that happened in those months and years to come that brought me where I am today. But when I look back, I realize that that exhale of a doubt that I might be missing out on something gave way to a fresh breath of hope that there was no more missing out at all. That morning after breakfast and worship, I sat down to reread one of my favorite poems, a piece of work by a theologian and activist named Dorothy Soule. And her words helped for me capture the ways in which we need each other in order to remind each other that Easter is real. For it is through each other that Christ enters our rooms, points out the consolations of new life, tells us that there is no more missing out, and shows us that he is here, he is risen, and he raises us to new life too. The poem is called When He Came, and it goes like this. I don't, as they put it, believe in God, but to him I cannot say no, hard as I try. Take a look at him in the garden. When his friends ran out on him, his face wet with fear and with the spit of his enemies, him I have to believe. Him I cannot bear to abandon to the great disregard for life, to the monotonous passing of millions of years, to the moronic rhythm of work, leisure, work, to the boredom we fail to dispel. That's how it is, they say. What do you want? Uncertain and not uncritically, though, I subscribe to the other hypothesis, which is his story. That's not how it is, he said, for God is, and he staked his life on that claim. Thinking about it, I find one cannot let him pay alone for his hypothesis, so I believe him about God, the way one believes another's laughter, one's tears, or marriage, or saying no for an answer. That's how you'll learn to believe him too, about life promised to all. Amen.